places, everybody. And action.
It's time once again for the Hooked on Movies podcast. Today, we are looking at episode one of Star Wars, The Phantom Menace from 1999. With me are Ken.
Using big doo-doo this time.
You always in big doo-doo. And Ted.
As with Ken, the ability to speak does not make you intelligent.
Using big doo-doo this time.
That's right. We should just do the podcast doing lines. And fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering. Suffering leads to our podcast. And we are talking about The Phantom Menace. Ken, why don't you give us the synopsis of this one?
Obi-Wan Kenobi is a young apprentice Jedi Knight under the tutelage of Qui-Gon. Anakin Skywalker, who will later father Luke Skywalker and become known as Darth Vader, is just a 9-year-old boy. When the Trade Federation cuts off all routes to the planet Naboo, Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan are assigned to settle the matter. That's the synopsis.
Well done. Ted, give us the particulars of this one.
Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, directed by George Lucas, with a screenplay by George Lucas. It has a running time of 133 minutes. It had a budget of $115 million. It had a box office gross of $1 billion.
Well, of course it did.
Of course it did.
It's the first Star Wars movie since 1983. Everyone came out to see it.
Yep. That they did.
That they did.
Including myself. And on Rotten Tomatoes, the critic score, it is a splat of 52%. It has an audience score of 59%. I would take the audience score with a grain of salt. There's a lot of bitter people. Also, too, the IMDb rating is 6.5. Here again, those are based off of viewer, and those can be manipulated.
And just for clarification, that's 6.5 out of 10, right? Not 100.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
So, The Phantom Menace stars Liam Neeson as Qui-Gon Jinn, Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan Kenobi, Natalie Portman as Padme Amidala, Jake Lloyd as Anakin Annie Skywalker, Ian McDiarmid as Palpatine, Ahmed Best as Jar Jar Binks, Anthony Daniels reprising his role as C-3PO, Kenny Baker reprising his role as R2-D2, Pernilla August as Shmi Skywalker, Frank Oz reprising his role as Yoda, Oliver Ford Davies as C.O. Bibble, Hugh Quarshie as Captain Quarish Panaka, Samuel L. Jackson as Mace Windu, Ray Park and Peter Serafinowicz as Darth Maul, Terrence Stamp as Finnis Valorum, Keira Knightley as Sabé, Silas Carson as Newt Gunray, Jerome St. John Blake as Arun Hako, and Brian Blessed as the voice of Boss Nass.
One of the few Samuel L. Jackson movies that are PG.
He does not use the F word in this movie.
Would have helped a great deal if he would have lost his
swearing Jedi.
Lost his shit in this one. Yeah, I would have loved that.
I've looked at Qui-Gon Jinn and said, "I'm trying real hard to be the shepherd, Qui-Gon."
That's right. That's
he had
right.
Some looks that looked like he wanted to say something, but he just did it.
Absolutely.
I'm trying real hard to be the shepherd.
George Lucas, I'm trying real hard with these lines right now. I'm trying real hard.
So, Ken, this thing won a few awards, or did it not win any awards?
It didn't win shit.
Anyway, oh, boy.
It got nominated for a few things here. It actually got nominated for 3 Academy Awards. Best Sound Effects Editing, Best Visual Effects, and Best Sound. All 3 awards all went to The Matrix, which is a much better film. It did win a Saturn Award for Best Costume and Best Special Effects. And the MTV Movie Awards for Best Action Scene. And I don't know where this came from. A Young Artist Award for Jake Lloyd's performance. I don't want to rip on a poor little boy, but he's now a man.
But you're going to.
We will during this podcast, I think. It was also nominated for other things like BAFTA for visual effects and sound, and a Grammy Award for
that's the English awards, the BAFTAs.
Yes,
the
BAFTAs, yeah.
That's because they will probably be sucking up since they filmed this in England.
And Liam Neeson's in it.
Best score soundtrack for visual media. However, the film did receive 7 Golden Raspberry Awards, back then known as the Razzies.
Ah, yes.
For Worst Picture, Worst Director, Worst Screenplay, Worst Supporting Actor for Jake Lloyd. Yes, I could. I don't know why this is on here. Worst Supporting Actress to Sofia Coppola. I don't know where that came from. Worst Scene Couple, Jake Lloyd and Natalie Portman. And Jar Jar Binks actor, Ahmed Best, won for Worst Supporting Actor.
Best couple?
Yeah, they do stupid crap like that.
That's a little creepy, but okay.
That's more like an MTV Movie Award type of award, but yeah. But I'm not going to debate them, because they would probably be right.
All right, let's talk about the first time we saw this movie. I know, Ted, you referenced you probably saw it at the theater, and you were probably first in line.
I did not see the midnight showing, but I saw it the next day with my dad, with Michelle, I think her college roommate, and my best friend at the time.
I assume a packed theater?
Oh, it was jam-packed. We had to get in line. I think we had tickets for like a 4 o'clock show. We were in line at like 1:30 or 2 o'clock.
So what character did you dress up as?
I did not dress up as a character.
Come on. You know you did. Come on.
I did not.
I'll ask Michelle.
You can ask Michelle. I did not dress up. I've never dressed up to go to the Star Wars movies.
But, just in the bedroom.
Yeah, just in the bedroom. I've seen the original trilogy in the theater, but this is of the newer Star Wars movies. This is the only one that I only saw once in the movie theater.
Wait, you saw the first one, the 77 one in the theater?
No, I didn't see the 70s. I saw the re-release. They re-released all three in the mid-90s before The Phantom Menace came out, when Lucas decided to butcher the original.
The special edition ones.
Yeah, the special edition. So I saw all three of those in the movie theater, which was I saw them once. But of the newer 6, this is the only one that I only saw in the movie theater once.
Oh, the other ones you saw multiple times?
We'll talk about Attack of the Clones in our next episode, how many times I unfortunately forced myself to sit through that movie.
You were tied to the chair at the time.
No, it was more trying to convince myself that it was good.
Probably took a lot of hallucinogens there.
A lot of popcorn.
Speaking of popcorn, Ken, how about you?
He saw
opening
it on
night and midnight.
Seriously, you saw this crap opening night too?
I saw this with a bunch of friends from work, and I worked at Mink. We went, and there was a huge line, and I sat basically all the way in the back. Yeah, I actually saw it twice in the theater, so I'm one up on Ted on that one. Fun fact about the second time I saw it, on the way back, driving home, some lady decided to hop the medium and hit my car head on.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah, I guess she fell asleep at the wheel. She probably was watching The Phantom Menace.
And you walked away from the accident?
I was able to stop my vehicle, so the impact was mostly on her.
Wow.
So,
the Force was with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought this would be done.
No. Maybe. For me, I have no idea when the first time I saw this movie was. I can tell you it was not in the theater. I've never seen any of these in the theater. Probably, I remember sometime, must have been the mid-2000s, where I binged all the movies. I was that person. I sat down, I binged them all. I forced myself to watch the prequels about 2 or 3 years ago. So this would probably be the third time I've seen this movie. Didn't get any better, unfortunately. So completely forgot Jar Jar Binks was in it until the scene. I'm like, oh, it's this one crap.
At least you were able to forget that he was in it.
I forgot most of these prequels, but hey.
Went to therapy and then it came out.
I went to therapy. Yep. Let's roll into part one here, Ken.
The Trade Federation has upset order in the Galactic Republic by blocking the planet Naboo and secret preparation for a full-scale invasion. The Republic's leader, Supreme Chancellor Thalorum, dispatches Jedi Master Qui-Gon and his apprentice, Obi-Wan Kenobi, to negotiate with the Trade Federation Viceroy. Darth Sidious, a Sith Lord and a Trade Federation secret benefactor, was the last Viceroy to kill the Jedi and began their invasion with an army of battle droids. Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan escape, however they flee to Naboo. During the invasion, Qui-Gon rescues a bumbling Gungan outcast named Jar Jar Binks. Indebted to Qui-Gon, Jar Jar leads the Jedi the Gunga's underwater city. Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan fail to persuade the Gungan leader to aid the planet's surface dwellers, but manage to obtain Jar Jar's guidance and underwater transport to the capital city of Naboo. After rescuing Queen Amidala, the group makes their escape from Naboo aboard the Royal Starship, intending to reach the Republic capital planet of Coruscant. Passing through the Federation blockade, the ship is damaged in a crossfire, and its hyperdrive malfunctions. The group lands for repairs on the outlying desert planet of Tatooine, situated beyond the Republic's jurisdiction. Qui-Gon, Jar Jar, and R2-D2, and Padme, disguised as one of her handmaidens, visits the settlement to purchase a new part for the hyperdrive. They encounter a junk dealer, Watto, and his 9-year-old slave, Anakin Skywalker. A gifted pilot and engineer who has built a protocol droid, C-3PO. Qui-Gon senses a strong presence in the Force with Anakin, and is convinced that he is the prophesied chosen one, destined to restore balance to the Force. With Watto refusing to accept payment in Republic currency, Qui-Gon wages both the required hyperdrive part and Anakin's freedom in a pod race. Anakin wins the race and joins the group to be trained as a Jedi, leaving behind his mother. En route to the starship, Qui-Gon is attacked by Darth Maul, who has sent to capture Amidala. After a brief lightsaber duel, Qui-Gon escapes on board the starship with the others. And that's the end of part one.
Ted, since this is your baby, why don't you lead us off in the discussion?
Ken said that he has a roller coaster of emotions with this movie. And
roller coaster of love.
I sympathize with that sentiment big time.
Ditto. So my roller coaster doesn't go as high probably as yours does.
The Kitty Land poster.
The battle scenes with Darth Maul and the two Jedis is pretty cool. The lizard people, not so good, or whatever the hell Jar Jar Binks is. What is he? He's a
some amphibian creature.
Some amphibian thing, or yeah.
Water.
So there are parts of this movie that make it almost borderline unwatchable. We'll start with Jar Jar Binks.
Okay, that's a good place to start.
He serves no purpose in the entire movie.
You're absolutely right.
The character does not need to exist.
I'm sorry. I got to interrupt you. I got to ask you this question because it's burning my mind now. Since both of you guys saw this in the theater, when Jar Jar Binks came on the screen, what was the reaction of the crowds? Do you remember? Was it like just dead silence?
But there were kids in the audience that thought it was funny.
It wasn't that many kids in line because it was midnight.
You went to the midnight, yeah.
By the time the movie, as it went on there were some slight boos.
The weeds started to wear off and people started to get the reality. Yeah. Oh, that's funny. That's awesome.
It started getting on people's nerves as the movie went along. At least that's my impression of it.
Because he's not funny.
No.
It's what George Lucas thinks is funny. And I read this past week. I guess Frank Oz gave a interview where he described Jar Jar Binks as being an Abbott and Costello style of humor. That's pretty accurate because I find them extremely annoying as well.
I do too. Thank you. I'm glad someone finally said that.
I don't see how this is Abbott and Costello in any type of way.
Well,
Abbott and Costello are annoying, though. That's what we're talking about.
No, they're not annoying.
It's all stupid humor. I stepped in a pile of crap.
Say your line. Say your line, Jack.
You're making it now.
and you know, the thing is, too, the biggest annoyance is something that should have been easily fixed. And that's how he talks.
Not just Jar Jar. You look at the other people, like
the Viceroy are like whiny, sniveling.
Well, and they're extremely
they're coming from Whatever.
It's like a, bad Asian accent.
It's extremely racist.
Yes.
And Watto is Italian. He needs to do is the hand gesture.
Exactly. Offer some pasta.
Right.
He should have been called Guido.
It's lowest common denominator shit.
Oh, it's awesome.
Is what it is. It's punching below your weight. You don't need to do this. I mean, just make the Nemoidians of Newt Gunray, the Trade Federation guys, have their lines be subtitled like they did with Jabba in Return of the Jedi.
And show backbone. This isn't that tough. They have like no backbone.
Well, they're supposed to be spineless because they're being used by the Emperor, which is fine. So, you know, we can start with Jar Jar, but here's also the biggest issue with this entire movie. This is going to be a reoccurring theme throughout the next two movies that we do. When George Lucas created Star Wars and he wrote it and directed it, he created something. But then he handed the direction and some of the writing off to other people, Lawrence Kasdan being the main person. Those people, and George Lucas's wife at the time, was a major governor on his worst tendencies.
Yeah, if she's a good editor on the movie, exactly. she knew how to cut the film. That's the other problem with this movie. Too long. This movie
was he divorced when he did these? Or?
Oh, yes.
So she had no influence at all.
She left him because of the Ewoks.
Oh, seriously?
No, that's awesome.
Kidding. Oh, no. Okay. No. I would love to be the this.
What we're going to look at in these three movies, George Lucas
uncontrolled.
Unleashed. And uncontrolled.
No filter.
Not having anyone, not one single person say no. He's like Elvis out there.
Except the audience, because Jar Jar really comes back in episode two and is not even a factor in episode three.
Well, that he helps create the Empire.
Yeah, he does. I mean, there was the rumor where he was going to be the Sith that we were all waiting for, right?
Then that's so ridiculous. George Lucas also, as a writer, does not know how human beings interact with each other. He does not know how people have conversations. He does not know human emotion. I wonder, as a visionary and a creator, he's unrivaled. But as far as knowing the human emotion and how humans talk and interact, he has not one single clue.
Fantasy is his world, but when it comes to humankind, it's
combining religion and science fiction and all of those sort of things and creating an entire universe. He's brilliant. But as far as actually putting stuff down on paper, he can't do it. Because there are plot holes here that are left completely wide open. It's never explained in any of these three movies why Anakin was a virgin birth. You have to go to an outside source material, which is one of the books, to understand what happened. He attempts to do it in Revenge of the Sith, but he stops short of actually saying what exactly happened. But here in The Phantom Menace, it's proposed that he's the virgin birth, and he's the chosen one. We're just supposed to accept that he's the chosen one. That's what makes this so frustrating. He needed somebody to be able to say no. And as far as being a director, he's not a good director. He's given good actors here. Liam Neeson praised him as a director. But as we're going to see going forward, he was not able to get...
He couldn't get a performance out of Jake Lloyd, that's for sure.
He couldn't get a performance out of Natalie Portman either. And Natalie Portman's a brilliant actress.
But I think it's also because of Lloyd. First of all, I think there's a mistake here with making Anakin so much younger.
5 years.
It didn't need to be 5 years. I mean, you could have made it a couple years or just the same age. And it didn't need to be that young and that awkward.
Because exactly.
You basically established no romantic chemistry on day one.
Well, because he's 9.
Right.
See, this is what I'm saying, that Lucas doesn't understand humans. You're 100% correct, Ken. The maturity difference between somebody who's 9 and somebody who's 14, the gap in maturity between those two ages is bigger than the Grand Canyon. There's no 9-year-old that's going to fall in love with a 14-year-old. And if there's a 14-year-old that falls in love with a 9-year-old, that's creepy and weird.
Here's the thing. If you make him the same age as her, she's still going to be more mature because, first of all, she's a queen.
Exactly.
And women seem to be more mature than men.
They especially mature at faster.
They mature faster. So why did you need to make him so young? You could have still had all the attributes. And then you could have had more of a seasoned actor playing the part. Somebody who's done a little bit more stuff. I mean, Ricky Schroeder's a little too old by this time. What's his name from The Sixth Sense? Went out for this part.
Haley Joel Osment.
He didn't get the part. He would have been a much better
choice. And he sees dead people.
And this is going to be a reoccurring theme as well. I have a hard time blaming the actors.
Because it's such a great cast of people, too.
Right.
The script is the script, right? I mean, you can only do so much.
The performance of Jake Lloyd, while it's not great, but he's given some really crappy direction and lines. I mean, the woohoo and shit like that is just crap.
But he couldn't deliver the lines when they were good, too. That's unfortunate. I don't want to bash him because he was so young back then. But he had been in a couple movies up to that particular point. But he was just way over his head. And of course, you're going to give him the role of the most anticipated role of ever. Everybody was waiting for this. And then you put an experienced actor in the situation. And even a good actor would get criticism here.
Well, especially with those lines, there's really no getting around it.
True.
And this is the final pedestal on everything that I base this on. The weight of expectation on this movie. There was no movie that was ever going to be able to live up to the expectations of what this was. In the build-up to this movie, they created one of the most awesome trailers that's ever been produced, where you had the Duel of the Fates playing and throughout the background of the entire trailer. The way it was cut and put forth, it was amazingly awesome, which that just hyped everything to another level.
So the trailer was better in the movie.
Oh, by head and shoulders.
Crazy.
If you have the Blu-ray, or if you have the 4K, go watch the trailers. As far as a trailer goes, it's a freaking masterpiece.
Oh, all right. I will say I've never watched the trailers.
I remember going to the movie theater to see a movie just to see this trailer. That's how hyped I was for not only the movie, but when I saw the trailer for the first time, my mouth hit the floor. But here's the thing. You had almost 25 years of books and ideas and people creating their own narratives.
Almost 15 years, but yeah.
I mean, had all of this time of these people creating these ideas and these stories, and there's no way it was ever going to live up that hype.
Let me ask you this, Ted. When we're talking about part one and part two, what do you think of the whole overall plot of the movie? Let's take away the fact, you know, of George Lucas's direction, bad writing, bad scripts. But the overall plot of the movie, do you feel that plot is up to Star Wars criteria, if you will?
Yes, because Star Wars ultimately is a space opera. I don't want to get too obscure with an operatic reference. The original trilogy is more of, it starts with a positive, and then you have the middle where it's more kind of negative, but then there's redemption at the end. A more traditional opera. This is operatic tragedy. This is Shakespeare level. The prequels need
an interesting take.
Without the writing.
Like, right. If you take his writing out of this, the actual story, yes, I think there is an amazing story there to be told. Where Anakin and Padme fall in love, you have star-crossed lovers who can't be together, and he's being told by the people that are above him that they can't be together. There's a classic story in that's a true story of it's the story of Heloise and Abelard. Abelard was a monk and a priest, and Heloise was a nun, and they couldn't be together because of obvious reasons. That sort of a story is what you could be looking at here, which is a timeless love story that is marred by tragedy. There is a really good story to be told here. It's so clunkily done, and I hate the, I may just made up an adjective.
That's okay. But, that's my choice. I'm just going around the whole.
But there is a wonderful story. You have the main character being manipulated by a person who's a double-crossing evil person. The story of Anakin Skywalker is a tragedy.
So it's already in this movie.
It gets lost. But ultimately, yeah, there is a great story here. You're right. Somebody to be able to write it.
The idea of it is good, but when you enter, when you throw in things like we already discussed, the age difference, the virgin birth, midichlorians, you know,
which are never explained.
Right. Yeah, what is up with that?
You know, and then you're trying to sell toys, so you get Jar Jar Binks. You can't understand half the time because the language is so. I mean, if you're going to do some character like that, you should be able to understand majority of what he's saying. And also just to make him a bumbling idiot. I mean, you bring him everywhere you go, even though you know that he causes chaos. But they're on Tatooine, and they are on the outskirts. His party is Jar Jar Binks and R2-D2. R2-D2 is a slow robot, so it takes him forever just to get to the city. And Jar Jar is only going to be a liability. What is Jar Jar going to even provide you in that situation? You just saved a bunch of pilots that you have in your ship. Why aren't you bringing them with you? Why aren't you bringing, you know, people that actually can help you in town? And I'll even go as far back as the beginning of this film. The Jedi Master is coming in there to force a settlement. Does that sound like a Jedi job? A Jedi job shouldn't be to be ambassadors to force a settlement. That bothered me right off the bat. It's like, why do we start off like this? And it's because the writing is bad. Even the Jedi sound stupid. Qui-Gon doesn't really say anything of Jedi Master level. He says there's always a bigger fish. That's this great line in the freaking film. If that's your claim to fame in the film, then we have a problem. If that's your great line. I mean, the only one I think that comes a little unscathed there is McGregor. And that's only because he's stuck on a ship.
That's true.
And Ewan McGregor is, as we're going to go through, he is the shining star.
You almost saved
out
this.
Of all three of these, all three of these movies. I mean, even though he has a rat tail in this movie, it just that's another thing that annoys me. But if we have younger people who are going to listen, and the Star Wars is going to bring in some more people, hopefully to have ears on our podcast for a lot of younger people, and Michelle's little brother and sister are two of them. This was their Star Wars, and there's a lot of people that absolutely love these three movies. And will defend them to the death. There are people in the Star Wars community that actually believe that The Phantom Menace is one of the best Star Wars movies made. And Michelle made a good point. Maybe this was directed at children at some aspect. Okay, that's fine. But that's not the story you're telling. There's an anecdote that I'll tell during Revenge of the Sith when I saw it in the movie theater where Dad brought his little kid. And the little kid asked his dad, not long into the movie, where's Jar Jar?
Why did you bring me here?
There are parts of Revenge of the Sith that's why it got a PG-13 rating. I mean, there's some serious stuff that happens. And see, and this is where Lucas lost control of himself. The original Star Wars movie was not directed at children. What happened was children took to Star Wars, were transfixed by going to a different universe, seeing Luke Skywalker blow up the Death Star. It was organic. The children coming to the movie was organic. And that clouded Lucas in Return of the Jedi, where the Ewoks went from being Wookiees to Ewoks to sell teddy bears. That's why Jar Jar Binks is in this movie, other than the fact I think probably Lucas thinks he's funny.
And here's the reason why he needs somebody that's funny. Han Solo was your funny guy, even though he was your hero. He was your sarcastic guy. You don't have a character like that in this movie.
No.
You don't not have at all. That comic relief, even if it's our sarcasm that is needed. He doesn't have something like that. So what does he do? He overthinks it and gives us Jar Jar Binks and overdoes it.
He's tried to play to the children aspect when he did the special editions where he took away the fact that Han shot first. I mean, he's done this over and over.
Jabba the Hutt's tail. That's what reminds me of comic relief.
I mean, and I'm sure there are people that are gonna listen. They're gonna be shaking their head that I'm being too harsh on this movie.
But we haven't even started yet.
Who are these people?
There are parts that I really like. I love the interactions between, even though he's on the screen for a total, I think, of like maybe 10 minutes. I love Darth Maul. I think Darth Maul's awesome. The lightsaber scenes in this movie are amazing. This is where the technology's helped. Lucas is notorious as a director for doing only one take, which is unheard of as far as directors go, especially because he idolized Stanley Kubrick. And there's a nod to Stanley Kubrick in Watto's junkyard.
What is that nod?
There's a HAL pod, EVA pod from 2001 in Watto's junkyard. I know, Ken, you're on the Jake Lloyd thing. And this could possibly go to what we're talking about. His performance comes off the way it does. In the case where there were more than one take done, the editing of this movie is a complete nightmare. Because what he would do, he would splice together the different takes that he thought was the best take from that actor in that moment, instead of letting the scene breathe and have them interact with each other. When Natalie Portman says her line, that might be on take 3, but then Jake Lloyd's response could be from take 6 or 7. So they don't match. You're destroying the scene. The scene that brings everything to a head is when they meet for the first time and they have that interaction. That interaction comes off as stunted between them and Watto's junkyard. And that's why, is because there's so many different takes spliced together that there's no way that those actors could have been any chemistry. And if there was chemistry in a take, it's gone now.
Imagine that the scene where when she says something about him being a slave and he goes, I'm not a slave, my name is Anakin.
Right.
I almost feel like that is like disconnected for whatever reason, and that could be what it is. So, I mean, the line's like, oh, are you an angel? Oh. Right off the bat, you just want to throw up in your mouth.
This is the age difference thing, though.
Mm-hmm.
That's something a child would say. It's not something that a preteen or teenager would say to another teenager. But it is something a child would say that's innocent. And
they try to make him as innocent.
It doesn't add up.
And they try to make him a little too perfect. They build him up as somebody who gives without thinking of a reward. But then they show a little bit of a temper. The problem here is just a character that doesn't need to be overhyped anymore. We know who he turns into.
Right.
We don't need to think he's from a virgin birth. We know what a badass Darth Vader becomes. You could just make him an ordinary kid who has the Force with him like they've never seen before.
And then explain why he has the Force. The reason that Anakin is quote-unquote from a virgin birth because that's exactly who it is.
Yeah.
Because Palpatine and his Sith mentor, Darth Plagueis could save people from dying. And we get that story in Revenge of the Sith at the opera. But what he doesn't explain is that the Force finds a way to balance itself at all times. So when Plagueis saves somebody from dying, it creates something out of nothing. And that's what Anakin is. Palpatine figured it out before he killed Plagueis. And that's how that all gets set up. But it's not explained. You have to go to that particular book to find that out.
Or you got to go to the end of, Rise of Skywalker to kind of put those things together as well. And then you really find out that in a sense, you know, Rey and Ben that are actually related and they make out at the end. So, you know, it comes full circle with...
That's a whole other...
that's a George Lucas tradition there.
Yeah, it comes full circle if that's what really is happening here. But you're right, Ted. We need better explanation of things. Why don't you just keep it simple?
Exactly.
Because that's what Star Wars was.
Here's the thing. Exactly. And he's coming in to a crowd who wants to love him. He's coming into a crowd that knows who Anakin is.
We're talking about George Lucas, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
He's coming to a crowd that knows that Senator Palpatine is not only Darth Sidious, but is also going to be the Emperor. So we know these things. They don't need to be hammered into our head. And he hammers them. I know we're not really being specific to exactly the first part of your plot here.
Yeah.
But there's so many reasons as to why this movie falls so short of being top tier and why there's such a gap between the original trilogy and this movie.
Well, there is some good coming around the corner. We've kind of hit a lot of things here. And then we're coming to the pod race, okay? But before we get to the pod race, again, having some problems with, hey, Annie's never finished a pod race before. They've already made a bet on a pod racer that has never worked before. Why do you have to make everything so difficult? Why can't you just have something that works? But once we get to the race is good. You got some great special effects in the race.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun to kind of watch
the CG is good in that race. Yes. You're right.
The only thing I don't like about the race is the announcers. They bug the crap out of me.
Doesn't it sound like Jason Bateman is the announcer?
No, it's Greg Proops. He was part of...
Oh, it's Greg Proops. Yes. Whose line is it anyway? I love Greg Proops. That's where I know that voice from. Okay, yes.
They try too hard sometimes to be relatable in this movie, to try to make something relatable, like the sportscasters or something like that. Does it play off really well? And again,
I was thinking Jason Bateman in Dodgeball. When they have that. Yes.
FNA Cotton.
That's right.
That's a classic one.
The pod race is one of the best parts of the movie.
Clearly.
I have no problems with the pod race. I have no problems with the fact that Sebulba tries to stop Anakin's pod. I do have a problem that he keeps killing all of the other racers. You know, that is what it is. But it is very dangerous, as we've established.
I love the sand people on top. I was trying to shoot them.
Nice sand people reference there. They're like, there's the sand people on the hill there.
Right. Like, it has to be pointed out that those are the Tusken Raiders. And why do they have to be there? And why do we have to see Aurora Singh? Here again, is a character that unless you've read the comic books or the books, nobody has any idea who Aurora Singh is.
I still don't.
Yeah.
Exactly. Of course, then there's the Wootini. Why did the Jawas have to be shown during the pod race?
I didn't mind that. I thought it was kind of fun.
It's fan service for fan service purposes.
Well,
it's like, okay, yeah, we know they're on Tatooine. We don't need to be bashed over our head by Thor's hammer continually that they're on Tatooine. Okay, it's Mos Espa. It's not Mos Eisley.
I would have a problem with that, but you've already been doing it with R2-D2. You're forcing R2-D2 on us. That's fine.
Well, I like R2-D2's origin story there.
That's the only thing. But of course, R2-D2 is the only droids left after they blow all the other droids out the water. And then I have a huge problem with C-3PO being made by Anakin.
Oh, yeah.
Huge problem with that. And it becomes a bigger problem as the movies go on.
Well, it does. Which they try to...
Yeah, they were making a job.
Yeah.
We'll get to it in a couple movies.
We'll get to that at the end of Revenge of the Sith.
Right.
Sure.
As to exactly how weird that is. I don't have a problem with Anakin creating C-3PO, because I think it shows just how amazingly gifted he is as far as creating.
Here's why I have a problem with it, though. He doesn't do that later on. He doesn't do that in the Rose of Trilogy. He doesn't have things that he's tinker with or anything that he's building.
Well, it's kind of hard for Darth Vader to tinker around with things.
I don't know.
He doesn't really have any hands.
Well, he can use his mind just to get the wrench to go across the room. So I think he's okay there. I don't have a problem with the meeting, but I don't like the meeting on Tatooine. If R2-D2 and C-3PO are going to meet, they're going to meet later on. They shouldn't meet right together in this first
movie. I don't disagree with that. But in the grand scheme of things, that is one of the least problems.
I have a question. How did Darth Maul find them on Tatooine? They said they were able to trace them.
He goes to Naboo. He has the governor, C.O. Bibble, send that emergency transmission to their ship. And he traces that transmission. Because they read that transmission, even though Qui-Gon told them and told
fake, don't do it.
Obi-Wan, yeah. Right. Do not listen to anything. Do not send any transmissions. Block all transmissions. Well, they let that transmission in of C.O. Bibble saying that everybody's dying and they're being put into camps, which that's a whole nother issue that doesn't need to be brought up. They're putting people into camps. I mean, I know Spielberg is Lucas's best friend in the entire world, but really, they're being put into camps?
I think did the camp thing, but
until you just brought it up.
They say it like 5 or 6 times that they're putting the people of Naboo into camps.
I just figured butt post catastrophic and things of that nature. I hear that.
Exactly. But that's what they're saying, and that's how Maul tracks that transmission. And when they receive it, he knows that they're on Tatooine.
Why are they surprised that they're found? I mean, Obi-Wan knows that the message came in. He told them not to respond to it, so they should already know that it's been tracked.
But Qui-Gon doesn't know, and that's when Maul.
Qui-Gon knows because Obi-Wan, I was throwing in his walkie-talkie. Because they don't know how to, plot with their Jedi mind. Qui-Gon even says that it's probably a trap. And Obi-Wan goes, well, what is true? What if people are dying? And he goes, well, either way, we're running out of time. So Qui-Gon knows.
Right. They don't know what's coming for them. And they don't know that Maul is a Sith. They don't know of the plot. Darth Sidious's ultimate plot, which we can start down this path. Because Darth Sidious's plot of how he's plotted this whole thing out is one of the most complicated and ridiculous things to how he becomes emperor. I mean, he sets up Valorum the whole way through so he can get elected. It's convoluted. And of course, he's a Sith.
Since you don't know about the plot, let's talk about part two.
Let's do it, man. Let's roll into part two.
My absolute favorite part is here in part two.
Okay, so Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan escort Padme to Coruscant so she can plead her people's case to the Galactic Senate. Qui-Gon asks the Jedi Council for permission to train Anakin as a Jedi, but the Council refuses, concerned that Anakin is vulnerable to the dark side of the Force. Because he has a lot of fear. Undaunted, Qui-Gon vows to train Anakin anyway. Meanwhile, Naboo Senator Palpatine persuades Amidala to call for a vote of no confidence in Valorum to elect a more capable leader and to resolve this crisis. Though she is successful in pushing for the vote, Amidala grows frustrated with the corruption in the Senate and decides to return to Naboo. Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan are ordered by the Jedi Council to accompany the Queen and investigate the return of the Sith, whom they have believed to be extinct for more than a millennium. On Naboo, Padme reveals herself to be the Queen before the Gungans and persuades them to join an alliance against the Trade Federation. Jar Jar is promoted to General and joins his tribe in a battle against
Hold on. He's promoted to Bombad General.
Okay, whatever that means.
And what is the difference?
Who cares? We'll talk about it.
George Lucas bullshit.
Yeah, right. During the battle in a hangar, Anakin flees to a starfighter and accidentally triggers its autopilot. Here we go again. Traveling to the battle against the Federation droid control ship and inadvertently causing the destruction from within, which deactivates the droid army. Meanwhile, Darth Maul infiltrates the palace and engages Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan in a lightsaber duel. Maul mortally wounds Qui-Gon by being bisected by Obi-Wan and falling down the shaft. I'm sorry, this is too funny. Before Qui-Gon dies, he asks Obi-Wan to train Anakin. Following the battle, Gunray is arrested by the Republic and Palpatine, and Palpatine is elected Chancellor, Grandmaster. Yoda promotes Obi-Wan to the rank of Jedi Knight and reluctantly accepts Anakin as Obi-Wan's apprentice. A funeral is held for Qui-Gon, attended by other Jedi, who contemplate that there is still one Sith remaining. During a parade on Naboo, Padme presents a gift of thanks to the Gungans to establish peace. And that's the end of The Phantom Menace.
There's a few things here. I love the first lightsaber battle between Qui-Gon and Maul. I think it was actually a really good decision not to display the double-sided lightsaber during the first interaction between Qui-Gon and Maul. I thought that was really good. The parts going back to Coruscant, here again, it's a bunch of ridiculousness, and it's more of Palpatine playing chess while everybody else is playing checkers. He can put a shroud over the Force, over the Jedi Council, is one of those things that's not really ever explained either. That's ultimately debated. We can discuss this before we do our reviews of who exactly is the Phantom Menace. But yeah, exactly. Ooh. But here again, everything has to be more convoluted than it has to be. When they go back to Naboo, that starts off the best sequence in the entire movie. And that's the final battle between Obi-Wan, Qui-Gon, and Darth Maul. That is freaking amazing. Ray Park is awesome as Darth Maul. The double-sided lightsaber that he wields is amazing. I thought that was an awesome idea.
You know who was supposed to play Darth Maul? McCoy, because his lines got cut.
There's a lot of people, but
he was actually signed on, and he was actually performing some scenes before he got cut. I'll give you a hint. He was in The Last Jedi. He played Thief of All Trades.
Oh, really? Benicio del Toro?
Yes.
Ooh.
That's interesting. That's a different movie. Wow. Yeah. That would be pretty awesome.
That was pretty cool that he was able to come back later on
and play a sneaky character.
Yes.
Not only is the lightsaber duel between those three awesome, John Williams cannot be given enough praise. The Duel of the Fates, outside of the Star Wars theme, the Imperial March, probably one of the best pieces of music in the entire Star Wars, in all of Star Wars. It is legitimately amazing. I remember the first time I got the CD. I got the CD the night that it came out.
Really?
And I listened to Duel of the Fates on CD over and over and over. It is one of my favorite pieces of classical music that comes from movies. Legitimately awesome.
As good as the Duel of the Banjos, though.
Where things start to have a problem, we know Anakin can fly. We watched him do the pod race. Why does he act like he's so shocked when he presses the button to start the goddamn starship?
Good question.
To fly away.
Well, there's a difference a little bit between a racer than a starship, a starfighter.
He couldn't figure out that the big button in front of him is the one that starts it?
It shouldn't have been that idiotic. It should have been
right. Maybe
an accidental bump. Maybe all this part is idiotic as far as Anakin going up into space and basically accidentally destroying that station. Well, what does this button do? Well, let's try spinning. Let's try spinning. Right. Oh, gosh. Really?
That's, exactly. We don't need that dialogue.
It's horrible.
We've established that he won. He has amazing instincts from the pod race. He's the only human that can do the pod racing. We know he's Darth Vader. We know that he's an amazing pilot.
We know that now.
Because because Obi-Wan told us he was the best starfighter in the galaxy in Star Wars.
Right.
In the original
we can see
in
that
A New Hope.
Next movie.
So we don't need, oh, let's try to spin because that's a good idea. The only thing he needs to say is, hey, R2-D2, take us off of autopilot before it gets us all killed.
Well, it comes out.
That's all he needs to say.
Maxwell Smart from JetSmart.
Bingo.
It's basically, I love that character. It's my favorite, one of my favorite TV shows of all time. I'm smart, but I don't know what I'm doing, so I'm going to accidentally get myself through all this. I'm going to accidentally be able to destroy these ships. So maybe this will do something. Maybe that will do something. I got to go back, though, to the question during the fight scene, the lightsaber fight. Why is there a freaking force field, and why does it last like 10 seconds at a time?
It was explained here again. This is something that people had to fill in. It's something to do with how the energy is fueled through the palace. It's all about how things are fueled. It's just one of those weird things, but it creates tension. I don't mind it. You also see a different side of Obi-Wan, where he gets anxious and he gets a little bit more aggressive. I think it works that way, but you also get to see that snarl from Darth Maul. You can see his hatred coming through. And
there,
I mean, he's terrified.
About something about revenge at the beginning of the film. So I'm not sure what the revenge is for exactly. They really never talked about.
For the destruction of... There's a lot of theories that have went out, and there's been, of course, stories that have been written about it.
But of course, they don't tell you in the film.
Ultimately, it's a... But ultimately, it's because the Jedi wiped out the Sith. What it was.
I just want to go back. This force field thing, though, it reminds me. You ever seen the movie Galaxy Quest? So in Galaxy Quest, there's a part where they have to go through the chompers. And she's like, what the hell is these things doing? You know, whoever wrote this, the script really, you know, is a bad script. It doesn't, it just didn't make any sense, the chompers. And that's what this reminds me of, is I understand what you're saying. It creates the tension, and yeah, I get it. But would it have been more badass if Darth Maul was able to just do this to the Qui-Gon with Obi-Wan there, and they're both fighting him at the same time? Doesn't it just make Darth Maul even more of a badass if he actually kills one of them on a 2-on-1?
Yeah. But then they also sell him out.
Oh, chop him in half.
But here's the thing. We know that
he survives.
Yeah, thanks
for a cartoon now, what, 15 years later?
Not only the cartoon, but in Solo, a Star Wars story, he's the leader of the other Crimson Dawn.
Yeah, but that's like years later. We have the Clone Wars, and I know there's a lot of Star Wars.
And Lucas's explanation as to why he gets bisected is even more stupid, because they filmed two separate endings to that lightsaber duel. One where he just gets killed by Obi-Wan and kicked down the shaft, and then he gets bisected. Lucas decided that he needed to be bisected so that the fans wouldn't want him to come back because he's too cool.
Oh, gosh.
If you already know that you've created a cool character, and your decision is, I'm going to kill him in the most horrible way possible so that he can't come back, but then tell years later down the line, tell the guy who is now the curator of all things Star Wars, Dave Filoni, to have Darth Maul resurrected again. You have fucked up your story so bad, and you know
you're
badly
off on the first film of a trilogy. I mean, this is the baddest looking motherfucker out there, and he's got skill. You keep him around. If you do anything, chop off his hand. You do that to Luke in Empire Strikes Back.
Everybody gets their hands chopped off.
You know, have something like that happen to him, and have him get away. You don't say Qui-Gon. Qui-Gon's dead. In good riddance to him, because I don't know if I like this character anyway. Here's a Jedi who's not even on the council because he doesn't obey the council. He never agrees. Even Obi-Wan says, if you just obey the council, you would be on it. But he doesn't, and that's not what a Jedi does. I mean, that's what we've been taught up to the fourth movie here, that a Jedi doesn't do those type of things. But then he's allowed to have a Padawan.
And we'll encounter that in Attack the Clones with Count Dooku, which is amazing because Qui-Gon was Count Dooku's Padawan. So you can see how that goes. But when you talk about undermining a villain, you undermined Darth Maul. The bigger problem here is you talk about the final scene and about with the star fight with Anakin and how he talks and how everything is like, oh, I'm going to try this or that. This begins the undermining of Darth Vader and cutting. I can't say cutting the legs out under Darth Vader because Darth Vader didn't have any legs.
But, or arms.
Or arms, right. This is where Lucas unintentionally starts to undermine the main villain from his original trilogy. Everything seems to be an accident, or it's so convoluted that there's no way. Should Anakin have been the one to blow up that starship that controls the battle droids? Yes, he should have. I completely agree with it. But he should have been a badass. And here again, the age problem comes into effect here as well. If he is even 12 or 13, it's a huge difference. And it would make more sense. Then you wouldn't have to include your stupid ass dialogue. Where, ooh, let's try this. Or let's spin. That's a good idea. Fuck that shit. Have him be a little cocky, little badass.
Well, she becomes in the next movie, so why not start it now?
But yeah, does he really?
He is cocky in the next movie. He is cocky.
Well, we'll talk about that, because Lucas cut the balls off of Hayden Christensen as an actor, and that's why he comes off as, I hate Sam.
Well, there are some problems. We'll talk about the next movie, but we still have to deal with this sad movie. Now that we talked about the fact that later on, Qui-Gon's master is in the next movie, why not save him to be killed by his own master? Wouldn't that make more sense? And then when Anakin kills him in the third movie, in Revenge of the Sith, there's a reason for it. You killed Qui-Gon. I was going to be his apprentice. That anger can lead him to the dark side. I don't think George Lucas ever had all this planned out to begin with, like he says he has.
No.
I think this is all on the fly and just made shit as he went along. And this is a good example of it.
Yeah.
Because he has to check his previous work from the original trilogy just to make sure there's continuity. He doesn't check that shit out. And nobody calls him out on that, like you said, because he doesn't have somebody that challenges him. And the problem is, his actors love him so much that they don't have the balls to tell him when he's doing something wrong. People do love him.
Who's going to tell the billionaire that he's doing something wrong?
But they do.
Yeah, right.
How many no people are surrounding Jeff Bezos right now? And, I mean, let's don't even go into Elon Musk.
He has zero people
around him that say no to him. It's an adequate comparison.
No,
there's nobody there to challenge them.
Comparison.
And just say this isn't a good idea.
I know that actors do adore George Lucas. Right.
Liam Neeson loved
him. I think
he's
really good, nice to the actors, but he doesn't challenge the actors. He doesn't bring the best out of them because of the bad dialogue, but also because he's not the best director for it. It's a shame because, like you said, the idea of it is good, but it's the plug-and-play stuff that he's throwing in and out of here that is just a big problem. Of course, with any kind of prequels, so we already know who the bad guy is. We already know who Senator Palpatine is. We already know that he's going to be the Emperor. You don't even disguise it well enough. You don't make us go, woo. And I went to see this movie a second time because I had to say to myself, maybe it wasn't that bad. So I went to the movies and I sat there and I go, yeah, it was that bad.
It was that bad.
I don't know if it's that bad or my expectations are still that high. Because this is the most anticipated film of my lifetime.
Oh, yeah. Hands down.
Even more so than like when they came out with the sequels. Because I've already experienced the wait for the prequels. So then, you didn't have all this internet stuff where you were finding out all this stuff before the movie even came out. 1999, there was some internet out there. And if you really wanted to search for it, you could find it. But in 1999... when you showed up with all your friends for that first screening, there was no word of mouth yet.
Yeah, AOL chat.
That was about it. But now, now you would cheer it accidentally because it just pop out of anywhere. You could listen to a sports podcast,
right,
and somehow Star Wars would pop out on it and ruin the ending for you. So this movie was the most anticipated movie, and I sat there and I sat there and I sat there and I waited for it to get good, and it got good during the fight. But to offset the good part of the fight, they had to throw in Anakin and the spinning and all that other stuff. That lightsaber duel could have saved episode one, but no, you had to screw it up by giving us Anakin to kind of offset that. That's why this movie just doesn't reach its point.
And, you know, and the reason, if I look back psychologically as to why I only saw it once in the theater, was when I walked out of the theater, I said, okay, it was not everything that I wanted, but I know where the story's going now. And Attack of the Clones has to be better. I immediately, walking out of the theater, was anticipating Attack of the Clones. And so...
which has to be better, right?
You didn't even have the title of the movie yet. But you knew the next movie, it had to be better. And psychologically, because the coming off of the high of the lightsaber scene, and then you have the mirror ending of Star Wars where they give the parade and everything. Ian McDiarmid is another saving grace in these three movies, because he relishes the role of the Emperor / Palpatine. He gives these little slight, sly lines where, when he looks at Anakin, I'll be watching your progress with great intention, however he puts it. He has this way of looking when he's even playing Senator Palpatine, the good guy. He gives these little side-eyed glances and things that give his true nature away. But there's a thousand ways, as far as Ken said, as far as making, you know, the whole idea of Dooku and Qui-Gon and Maul and Palpatine, that whole square of a relationship, how that could have all been played out. We can sit there and do that for hours. I wish that Lucas would have sat and done it for hours.
Yeah,
and trying to figure it out. But I don't even think he knew who Count Dooku was at that point. And based off of Dooku's role in Attack of the Clones, it proves that he really had no idea.
Jar Jar is a good example of that, too, because we barely see him after this. And I think that Jar Jar is just, wasn't part of the original plan. He threw it in there again, like we said earlier. It's the Ewok effect, which didn't work out.
It's not fair to Ahmed Best, where he contemplated suicide on more than one occasion because of the backlash that he got from being Jar Jar Binks. He didn't deserve that.
Nobody deserves that.
Right. Jake Lloyd didn't deserve the hate that he's gotten. Mercifully, Jake Lloyd has gotten his life back together after a lot of trials and tribulations.
What is Jake Lloyd doing these days?
Well, he lives a lot off of Star Wars, but he also goes through the convention circuits and things like that. But I don't know what his real job is now nowadays. But he has come back to the Star Wars universe or community. And
actually, in mid-2023, Lloyd suffered a complete psychotic break. And he was arrested after turning.
Well, then he must have fallen off.
He's had some difficulty with mental illness.
He's had some major problems.
Hopefully, everything works out, and he gets his life back together again. His career was over 2 years later, his filming career.
He was, because he was teased in school by his classmates.
It's horrible.
And
why you needed a seasoned actor. Somebody who had more credits, somebody who enough of a background that even if it was a flop and a bad performance, he had all these other things that he could have fallen back on. That's like with Natalie Portman. Natalie Portman doesn't get the crap that he gets, because she's been in good stuff before and good stuff after. Professional,
right?
Black Swan,
right?
We won't mention No Strings Attached. Anyway, I mean, she's a good actress.
Yeah,
I feel bad for him in this situation. I hope everything works out for him. I don't mean to rip on him, but I think George Lucas put him in a bad situation. It would take an amazing acting job to actually overcome the obstacles that was put in front of him.
He would have had to put in a performance like Anna Paquin in The Piano, that won an Academy Award when she was 9.
Or off at, with the Sixth Sense? I mean...
Right, with the Sixth Sense. But he's even had problems after the Sixth Sense.
True, but he's had some success afterwards. He's had some decent movies. Yeah. You know, he still acts. I mean, I just saw him a couple years ago in The Boys.
No,
I want to touch one more thing before we hit our reviews, and that's the special effects.
Okay.
As we touched a little bit about it, but we didn't touch a lot about it. There are some things that I struggle with. When they came out of the air shaft at the beginning of the movie, and you see those two little guys that drop down from the top. It's just, why even show us a scene like that where it just looks so computer animated? Why even bother doing that crap? Right. And then when you are on the planet, it almost looks like they're fighting on AstroTurf. Looked like real grass.
I was thinking of the water scenes.
Are pretty bad. Or like the underground city. I think the
underground city's fine. It's coming up and out of the water and everything that's awkward and weird.
I do kind of like it when they're trying to go up the planet's core, but just tell me if I'm wrong here. When you come up with planet's core, shouldn't there be some hot lava involved and all that if you gotta go through planet's core?
I will say this about the special effects. The 4K transfer did this no justice. If you can watch the Blu-ray version.
I watched the Blu-ray. Yeah, there's a lot of 4Ks times can get brutal.
Or the original DVD version. It's a little bit better. It's a little bit easier to watch because the 4K, there's a lot of times where you can see
green screen.
Yeah. But I will say this, it's a hell of a lot better than the travesty that is the end of the Attack of the Clones. That's a cluster.
Do you mean on 4K or just overall?
Overall.
Okay.
It's bad.
Regardless of where you're watching it.
It's really bad. You know, here again... We talked about the nominations. Ben Burtt deserves credit beyond credit for being the sound man and how he creates the different sounds for the different ships and everything. He's a genius, beyond genius. He's one of those Lucas people that is awesome. And here again, too, we talk about the special effects. He didn't really touch a lot of the music here. John Williams.
Well, that's all you have to say. It's John Williams.
Okay, John Williams doesn't do a bad soundtrack. Come on.
John
Williams.
That's
a given. You don't even need to mention that.
He's going to go down as one of the best composers.
He is the best composer.
I'm going to go back a little bit to the special effects because I can't stand those android robots.
That have their little voice and talk like this?
The battle droids should have never talked.
The battle droids have more emotion than some of the people.
They
have ranks.
But they should never have talked.
Corporal. And you know, like, how do you advance off the line of chain of command? I mean, what do you have to do to become a robot?
Yes.
It's ridiculous.
It gets worse in the next movie, too. We'll talk about that in the next one. It's really bad.
Exactly. He has to compound on the stupidity. I love the droidicas, the little circles, the balls.
Like
I think that they're awesome. The battle droids, the battle droids themselves, I think, are a really cool design. There's no reason for them to talk. There's no reason for them to have ranks. All they have to do is be silent killing machines. And see, that's where the trailer comes in, because the trailer portrayed them as awesome, and you're just in awe of them. And then we get to the movie, and they start to talk, and it's like, really? That's freaking stupid.
A personality in this movie. You know, you already have things like, you know, C-3PO and his kind all have personalities. R2-D2 has his own personality. You're just trying to.
But these are primitive robots
made for children. Again, they talk so children can understand. Roger, Roger. You know, it's. You know, kids are like, oh, that's cute. Oh, look, they're dead. Well, there's no blood. There's no smoke. There's no nothing. That's the other thing is every time one of these things get destroyed, there isn't any smoke. You see a little burst of electricity, and that's it. He's trying to make it as PG as he can so you can take the kids to see this movie. It just falls flat. This is the only movie I've ever had that I went to go see that I walked out with a concussion. that I didn't remember what happened to me after I left the movie. So
funny.
Are we ready for the reviews?
I think we are ready. Well, then we'll start off with me. All right. So my reviewer is Anne Hornaday of the Baltimore Sun. Anne says, Neeson and McGregor seem so focused on hitting their marks for the blue screen that they barely make eye contact, let alone generate any genuine emotion. Yeah, I can agree with that, along with most of the other cast of this movie. Is the movie a train wreck? It's pretty close. We can compare it to a few other movies that we'll see down the road here, but this one is not good. It's not good because it was hyped like, you know, the coming of the Messiah for Star Wars fanatics, and it was a huge, massive letdown. That should just nick it right there for its movie criteria. But overall, the movie, we've really summed it up. Bad directing, bad script, great cast, but they're just not given the freedom to make this movie good. I love the original Star Wars movies from the 70s and 80s. This is a massive disappointment for me. Honestly, if I never see it again, I forgot about it. I completely forgot who was in this movie before I watched it for a third time. This one, it's still Star Wars, so it gets a little bit of cred. I'm going to give it 2 hooks. All right, Ken, tell us what your review is. Who do you want?
Tony Black from The Cultural Conversation, which wherever that's from. But I like what he has to say. The Phantom Menace will always be possibly the single biggest missed opportunity in modern cinematic history. I couldn't agree more. It could have been so much more. We talked about the idea of it makes sense. The idea of how the beginning of Anakin on his road to become Darth Vader. We understand the idea of it. And we agree with the idea of it. But the problem is Lucas didn't do enough and didn't invite enough people to kind of go back and forth with, you know, try to get some real good feedback on this film, or else I think it would have worked out very well. You talk about the virgin birth, and you know, you talk about midichlorians and all this other stuff, but you don't give anything to kind of tell us what that all means, what that's all about. You know, we talked about Darth Maul talking about, you know, revenge. Revenge for what? Give us more. This movie is also a little bit long. I think it's somewhere like around 2 hours and like 15 minutes, somewhere around there. It could have been much tighter. There's a lot of dead, boring. It's just George Lucas trying to show off his special effects capabilities, which down the road ends up actually hurting these films because they become dated. Unfortunately, not so much in this movie. This one is not as bad, but there are times in this movie where it's like, yeah, if you ever want to do a special edition, you might want to go back and clean some of that crap up. But don't touch the original trilogy ever again. In fact, bring us back the original trilogy just the way it was. On that note, I'm torn because I still watch it. I don't know why, but occasionally I catch myself still watching this freaking movie after all these years. Once every 2 to 3 years, I'll watch it. Of course, TNT or TBS will come up with it on their Star Wars weekend. I will convince myself that I need to watch it again for no good reason. I want to give it 3 hooks. I don't know why I want to give it 3 hooks. But talking about this and complaining about as much as I am, I'm going to take a half a hook away and I'm going to go with 2.5 hooks. It's still watchable. And you can still have a fun time watching the movie if you can't. But if you're going to compare it to the original Star Wars trilogy, I'm sorry, but for those in my generation that grew up with this movie, with the original trilogy, this falls way short. Way, way short. So 2.5 hooks, I'm done.
Amen. All right, Ted, take us home.
Just start off with my critic that I'm going with is Peter Travers from Rolling Stone. Because I had a hard time going between the top critics because either the top critics really, really liked it or they really, really hated it. And Peter Travers kind of falls kind of in the middle. And the blurb from his review that I took is, the actors are wallpaper, the jokes are juvenile, there's no romance. And the dialogue lands with the thud of a computer instruction manual. I think that pretty much sums up exactly how I feel about the actual movie itself. That being said, when I have the desire to, you know, to watch all the Star Wars movies, depending on which order I watch them in, whether it's there's something called the machete order. There's different orders in which you can watch the movies. And I still watch this movie. I'm torn by this movie a lot because this is not my least favorite Star Wars movie by any stretch of the imagination. This was ultimately is a disappointment, but there's another disappointment coming that is looming that overshadows this. Ultimately for me, it's Star Wars. I make no secret. Star Wars is, it's my childhood. It's where I could escape. I wore the VHS copies out that I was given. This is a connection to my dad. It runs deep and very personal. And it's hard to be fully objective. And I know that I've done everything I can to be objective. I know what the faults are, but I still like it. And I think that's kind of the abusive relationship that Lucas put us in, where he knows we like it. And he,
I don't like it.
Didn't that he didn't honor his relationship with the fans. I think that's what hurts the most. But I think, Eric, you posed one of the best questions to me about the plot. The plot's there. And I think that's what hurts the most out of these three movies. There was the potential for an epic trilogy of tragedy that is Anakin Skywalker that just fell on its face. For me, it's 3.5.
Ooh.
Because it's not the worst. It's by far not the worst. Yeah, it still is watchable for me. And like Ken said, there are times where, you know, I get the desire that I have to watch it. And now, granted, I don't watch it nearly as much as the original trilogy. I have to be honest with myself. I know all of the faults, but I still have a connection to the movie that I can't deny, and that's why it's 3.5. If you're new to Star Wars, you can't be disappointed by this movie because this is your starting point.
I guess if you're starting in order from 1 through the end, this right. would be it.
Because it only gets better. I mean, hold my beer. It goes down before it comes back up.
It's like the stock market. But, it's up and down, up and down.
Right. But yeah, it's hard because I really want to give it the 4 that a Star Wars should get. And to quote Brokeback Mountain, I can't stop love. I just can't quit you. It's kind of like that, you know.
I've never seen that movie.
Oh, as far as a movie goes, it's one of the most beautiful shot movies ever. The Montana and Wyoming are just amazing. It's so beautiful. And one of the most tragic love stories, too. But that's a whole nother podcast.
All right, great. So we've each given it our reviews. We've made no bones about it. Our next movie is Attack of the Clones, or as I call it, Attack of the Clowns. And maybe you'll call it. And maybe you'll call it something even worse. So, episode 2 of the Star Wars extravaganza begins with our podcast. Next episode, tell us where they can find us on the World Wide Web, Ted.
We can be found on Twitter at @HookedOn_movies. Come there and tell us what you think of The Phantom Menace. Tell us the first time you saw it. Tell us what your expectations were. If you disagree with what we said and you are one of those people that are a defender of the prequel trilogy.
Yes, yes.
And whatever podcast version you're listening to us on, whether it be Apple, Spotify, Good Pods, or whatever, if you can, leave us a 5-star review and write a review. Tell us on the review what you think of The Phantom Menace. Or tell us who you think The Phantom Menace is.
I have
my own opinion of who I think The Phantom Menace is. Maybe we can discuss that on Facebook. Hey, Ken, what about what's on Facebook?
You will join our Facebook page. What is on Facebook? You will listen to this podcast every single week of your life, the rest of your life. This is the podcast
you're looking for. This is the podcast you are looking for.
But yes, join us on our Facebook page. We have previews of movies that we're going to review. We talk about things that are happening in the entertainment industry, especially when it comes to movies. So come in and join the fun. The water isn't cold. It's just right. We'd love to have you.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us on this episode of the Hooked on Movies podcast. As always, May the Force be with you.
See you at the movies.